It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hello, Denise. How are we going?
Hey, good. Kia ora. How are you doing?
Kia ora. Yeah, pretty good. It's a Friday. Feeling good about that.
Yep. I'm very happy with Fridays. They're good.
Yes. I mean, Fridays I get to talk to you, so obviously it's a good day.
Oh, nice. Just feelings good. Mutual.
Aw, so sweet. Before we get into some questions. So I'll jump into the terrorism suppression bill, which has been kind of a hot subject at the minute. National Party's kind of proposed a few amendments. Could you tell me a bit about them?
Yeah, so we've got 7 specific amendments. We were super surprised that Andrew Little, the Minister of Justice, dismissed our changes really quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were genuinely surprised, thinking that we'd have a sort of a good faith discussion. And we've got very, very practical about these 7 particular points. And I'll just give you 2 so you can get a feel for what it is that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. One is that it's all about control orders, right?
Yeah.
So being able to introduce a control order for someone who you think needs to be watched or detained for very good reasons around terrorism. Mm. And for anyone listening, this is somewhat of a response to Mark Taylor, a radicalised New Zealander who wants to return. But of course, there's lots of examples for extremism. And we all know very in recent times what extremism can look like in New Zealand. So we had a suggestion, here's one of them, that instead of the maximum control order time being 6 years, so the bill right now says that you can put in a control order for 2 years and then you can renew it twice.
Mm.
So 2 plus 2 plus 2. Well, we're saying, hang on a minute, why don't we go with the same 2 years, the same 2 initial years, but then have unlimited renewal. So if someone's not, I can't think of another way to say other than, if they're not de-radicalised after 6 years, well then maybe we need to be able to renew it more. So just a very practical extension, but that was sort of shot down. And then the other is the age.
Mm.
So what we've got here is the government saying that control orders can only apply to those aged 18 and over. And we think that's far too old. If you look at Australia, they started in their legislation with 16-year-olds, and then they had a horrific case of a 15-year-old who'd been completely radicalised by their family, and we know that this can happen. And so they had to change their legislation to 14, and that's what we're suggesting too, that it should be and could be applied to 14-year-olds and over. And look, I think that's reasonable, Laura. I mean,
I might just use your example that you just used there. You said they were radicalized by their family, so their family would also be watched, presumably under this legislation. So, and also a 14-year-old really doesn't have the planning capacity to organize something. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely they do. Yeah, absolutely they do. Now, how they were assisted to do that might be a wider circle, a wider network. But there are 14-year-olds making some very hefty decisions every day. And it's not unreasonable, especially when we've got specific cases, as I referred to that Australian case of the 15-year-old. This is something that is really regretful, but yes, it happens. We've got 12-year-olds committing serious crimes here in New Zealand. I know it's not the subject of terrorism, but it's not unusual to have young people under some serious influence. So we need to keep New Zealanders safe. There's no space for any form of terrorism here in New Zealand.
Of course, this subject has been getting quite a bit of criticism, particularly from the Green Party. The bill kind of requires overseas entities to report whether someone has engaged in terrorist activity. And as Golrez Garman pointed out, you don't really know what means have been employed to get someone to admit something like that, whether it is a form of torture. Is that not something you're concerned about?
No. Look, in that instance, the bill has got some good safeguards. That would be something that we'd agree with. What we'd like to see is just some more tightening up. I'll give you one more example, and that's around when there is a breach of that control order. Right now, the bill says that it's just a fine of $2,000 or maximum 1 year in prison. We're saying that don't even worry about the money, because in some instances money's not a deterrent, but that we should be able to imprison up to a maximum of 5 years.
I don't know if that answers my question, though, because what I'm asking you is Golrez Garman is concerned by the means as to which we're getting these people reported to having committed acts of terrorism.
Well, we've got to rely on the information that we get, but we've got some very sophisticated ways of international collaboration around persons of interest. So we'll just have to trust that our security networks, we're a member of the Five Eyes network, that they are sophisticated enough to know exactly who should be a person of interest. I have not detected in any way, shape or form concerns around our intelligence network.
Mm. Do you think this could potentially disproportionately affect areas of the world that employ hyper-surveillance on their citizens?
No, I think it applies to anyone coming from any country that's exhibiting known signs and actions of terrorism and extremism.
Mm.
And we have a duty to keep New Zealanders safe. There are lots of ways that we can help out with human rights, but allowing entry to New Zealand is just not something that we should take a laissez-faire or relaxed approach to.
Mm.
So introducing this legislation is right. We're saying that it's not tight enough, and we just want the conversation, and are very surprised that Andrew Little shut it down.
Mm. I'll definitely be interested to see how that pushes forward.
Sure.
I'll shift on to National's questions, or specifically Simon Bridges' questions being slashed by the Speaker. So what kind of actions has the party taken to work in changing the legislation that currently prohibits the use of parliamentary footage and the way that National's kind of been punished for?
So is the question, what do we think about the new Speaker's ruling?
No, I'm more so curious what actions you guys have taken so far to work towards changing legislation that has resulted in these punitive measures on the National Party.
I'm still not sure I get the question around changing the legislation. Our reaction to the Speaker's rulings about not being able to use videos of clips from people speaking in the debating chamber without their permission, our reaction to that is that we want to, we'll adhere to that ruling as it is now, but we weren't going to retrospectively take down what we did, because we believe that, I mean, for goodness sake, just clipping public speeches, anyone can watch Parliament anytime.
Yep.
And other people can clip speeches. So we just didn't think it was fair at all for Labor to strangely come down with a really big sledgehammer when we're trying to do videos on issues like taxes and costs being piled on Kiwis and congestion and drugs, crime and gangs. You know, these are topics that Kiwis want to see about. It's about freedom of speech and expression, Laura.
Mm. I find that National Party, in terms of the response to this ruling, has been a tad antagonistic, though. So past the deadline, and then en masse, National Party released another ad. This seems a little problematic. Do you not see that?
Well, no, we definitely don't see it, because here's why. This is not us, you know, blatantly, willfully going into material that's illegal, or we're simply showing people what government MPs and ministers have said in the debating chamber. So at no point do we edit their words or twist their meanings. We simply are showing excerpts of what they've said. And because they're clever, and because they've had massive reach, and have been problematic for the government, they don't like it. So we stand by simple concepts of freedom of speech and expression, and actually it really raises the question around censorship. Mm. How come something so simple as showing what the Labor Party are saying in the debating chamber is a problem? Why
I suppose
is it a problem?
The problem with that, though, is it's not your speech. You're not saying something yourself. You are taking what someone else has said and putting it in a context that suits your agenda.
Yeah, it's not a context. It's exactly what they said, and I would say it's very interesting, isn't it, that there's so much defensiveness over us playing what they've said. Sometimes people say things in the debating chamber later at night. I mean, we sit in that debating chamber till 10 o'clock at night, and they say stuff that actually the public deserves to know. They think it's off the cuff, or they think it's casual, or they think it's not being noticed. Well, it is being noticed, and that's just simply us doing our job. We're not manufacturing things that have been said. They have been said.
Mm. So just going forward, your party, are they still planning to use parliamentary footage in this way?
No, we'll adhere to the speaker's rulings as they are, but we're not going to continue. Anyone just pop on our Facebook page. Anyone can see what we're doing now. We'll continue to hold the government to account, and we've just put out recently stats around 22,000 more people going onto the unemployment benefit, onto the dole. We've got a huge gang increase, so we've had quite a few different videos out recently, and it's our job. We need to keep the government to account.
I'll shift on to our last subject here. So we've got a kind of Shrewbeck 2.0 situation going on. Ian Lees Galloway has granted residency to a repeated drunk driver. National has kind of come out with some criticism. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so this is a person who's been given residency, which means that, of course, they can go on to get citizenship. And the person's had not one, not two, but six drink driving convictions. So you've got to ask yourself, why is the Minister of Immigration again allowing a very, very interesting case to come through? What's the justification behind this kind of decision making? We're at a loss. The minister has said, oh, well, the person's been in the country for 20 years and they've been out of trouble for a while now. But six drink driving convictions, you know, this is a massive issue. People want to feel safe on the roads. I'm often told by the police, and I just had a session just about an hour ago here in my community, Coffee with a Cop, and we're often told, and he said this morning, that it's not you on the road that's sometimes the problems, it's other drivers. Mm-hmm. Well, here's a guy six times convicted over the limit in driving. It's so dangerous. Mm-hmm. Why does this person have residency now for New Zealand?
But I suppose some people could look at this as a tad hypocritical when in 2012 he was given protected person status under National's leadership.
Yeah, so what we did was grant a temporary work visa that is reviewed. Mm-hmm. It has to be reviewed every so often, right?
Yeah.
So at any point, we could have stopped granting that work visa. That was just a temporary work visa. The minister has gone the full hog and given the person full residency. There won't be any reviews for it, and that person, after a period of time, can get citizenship. So one was temporary and can be reviewed. Their version is permanent with no reviews. This guy's in, and he's here, and he's been caught 6 times. Do you feel safe on the road with that guy? I don't.
Well, I don't feel safe on the road with a lot of people, but I won't jump into that. But I suppose I just want to discuss that protected person status that he's been granted. Do you think it's potentially, from the public's perspective, a little haphazard in terms of criticism to not consider that that person is in danger if they return to their original place of citizenship?
Well, there's kind of questions around that too, right? So if this man is, as said by the minister, at risk of danger or torture if forced to leave New Zealand, you know, that's the technical term, well, you know, we don't know his identity. It has lots of things come to mind. Do we have any idea if he's a former war criminal? We don't know anything around the past. I actually think it raises additional questions rather than just go, okay, well, you know, that's that. He really should be here permanently.
But it was your own party who granted that protection status.
Yep, and attached to a temporary work visa, right? So it's all and with regular reviews. So we were willing to say, on the sum of things, there's a temporary status, and we'll see what happens, but not permanent and not with no review.
Mm. I suppose, but if you don't have that information about the individual, what status they have, is it, by having this rhetoric, is National playing politics with a person's safety?
Well, no, not playing politics with a person's safety. I'd say playing caution with the country's safety.
Mm. All right. I think that's a good spot to end before I ask you my final question. So question for today, what is the most adrenaline-inducing thing you've ever done?
Okay, so I like this question because I actually quite like things that make my heart beat faster and adrenaline, and I think I'm
adrenaline
a closet.
Junkie.
I think I am, but I'm not willing to say the full hog because, you know, I'm not exactly going base jumping or anything.
Okay.
Although I would. I would if I could. So I think, so I'm trying to think of recently, probably when I did my first demolition derby.
Mm.
So you don't know how smashed up you're actually going to get, and you don't know until you take your first hits in the car what kind of, you know, whiplash or spinal hit you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I remember, I mean, my heart was beating wild with that. So you get out onto the track and there's, you know, 45, 50 cars, and you just literally got to hit and smash each other till it's, you know, there's only one car left running. So that took a fair bit of adrenaline, I have to say.
That sounds so fun, though.
It is so fun. Hey, you should come and do it with me because I'm about to do my fifth one next Easter.
I need to pluck up some courage to do that, I think.
You could, anyone can do it. All you need is a dungy car, and you have to gut out the inside, take out all the glass and the plastic. Little bit of a sort of a roll bar, and Bob's your uncle.
Wow. So call out to all of Auckland, basically.
Yep.
And, get into
and
it.
Shout out. Call out and a shout out to Waikaraka Speedway, which is in my area in Onehunga, and they're the ones that house us every Easter. Big spectacular, fireworks, drag cars, drift cars, the whole lot's great.
Love it. I love it. I might take you up on it. I just need to grow a spine.
You can do it. Put it this way, I haven't been to the chiropractor yet.
Oh, I mean, I've been to the chiropractor many times, so I'm a little sensitive. I'm looking forward to talking with you next week, Denise.
Yeah, me too. You take care, Laura.
You too. See ya.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.